So moving on to the next thing we got here, we got homebrew content we've implemented or working on. Like, have you created your own setting, or races, or feats, or skills, or just anything? And go a little bit into. There's a lot. You can just go into some of the stuff that is most noteworthy for on your behalf of what you've made, because some people do a lot of shit from scratch, so.
I have homebrewed two settings in total. One is called the Five Kingdoms Alliance, and it's a low magic setting, where there are only sorcerers and clerics, and nobody plays. Well, I have run two games in it. One of them was kind of. You can play what you like, play a sorcerer, play a cleric, and one was kind of a more of a mercenary thing, where I said only martial classes, nothing that can cast spells, and people were like, "But you said there were clerics and sorcerers," and I said, "Yeah," and I also said you weren't allowed to play them in front because if you had magical powers, you wouldn't be doing this. If you had magical powers, you would be either dead, working in a church somewhere, or ruling a country.
Wait, you
Which.
said you'd be dead. Like, are there like serious witch hunts in this setting?
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Basically, the times they saw tieflings, they were hanging from trees.
Oh. Oh.
Generally.
So no edgelords allowed is what you're saying.
Not really, no.
Damn.
That setting was kind of brutal, and it was, again, only for people who kind of liked that thing, so I advertised it heavily up front that that wasn't allowed. And the reason people just didn't play clerics is because all the gods are good in that setting. There is no war god, there is only life, death, etc. Kind of facts of life, harvest, that kind of thing.
More like
And
kind of like Egyptian, like I guess like tone for Pantheon.
There, well, there's only six gods and they're all like lawful good. And so, well, yeah, they're lawful good in their own ways. But so clerics do not get to harm other humans and elves and such, other sentient races. If they do, they get their powers taken away.
Wait, like they're not allowed to harm others at all? Like not even in
No.
self-defense?
If the defense of the church is at risk, then they can. But otherwise, no. If
Okay.
they are come to personal harm, then no. They are not allowed to. People do not generally attack churches
Yeah.
because, again, it's a place of a god. That is kind of a big ass no-no. And well, again, that's the only the like many people have kind of the idea that magic comes from the gods, and if you have arcane magic, so if you are a sorcerer, that is basically inherently evil. That doesn't stop sorcerers from having kingdoms, though, because. Well, who's going to stop them, basically?
Yeah.
Clerics can't, because, well, if they attack another human being, they lose their powers, so that's the end of that story. And sorcerers kind of don't have that problem. I've done one very high magic setting, which was just about kind of approaching the end times. I've done many, many weapons. But not races or feats, because I'm too afraid to get into that. And power balance is. Let's say a big time company like Wizards of the Coast can't get it right, so why would I be able to?
That's a very good point.
And I have edited feats, but not made new ones.
What sorts of, just listing one feat you've edited.
Sharpshooter.
So what does that normally do, and what did you tweak on it?
It gives you, you can choose to take a -5 to your to hit roll. And you then, if you hit, do an additional 10 points of the weapon damage. It also gives you the in I believe it you are no longer hindered by anything but full cover, so partial cover and such doesn't affect you anymore.
So they threw improved precise shot in with deadly aim for this one,
Yeah.
basically.
And that is basically what I did. I separated them into two separate things.
Oh, okay.
I basically went the plus 10 minus and the minus 5 plus 10 thing is now a separate thing because, well, I kind of don't want to. You don't get to end, like, ne basically negate the debuff and then also, like, have all the bonuses attached to that. You're going to have to choose. Because I like my game to be about meaningful choices, and if there is one thing basically optimal, why would you pick anything else?
Yeah, that's another thing that I didn't really think of when I was going over things that could improve and how like there's a lot of feats that are it's like not real it's like an illusion of choice because there's certain feats that basically certain kinds of characters have to take. And that's dumb to have like options that aren't actually options, like fighters taking power attack. There's just not even a question about it. If you don't take power attack, you don't do good enough as a fighter. And that's some people have done like feat tack stuff where they just basically make a lot of feats not feats anymore and just standard combat things. So like power attack is no longer a feat. It's just like an ability you get if you're a particular style of character. Things like that. Have you ever implemented something like that?
I have, yes. I've made my own kind of things like the accurate aim thing and such. I have kind of given out. It's not really like monks are pretty good in 5e because they're kind of an everything, similar to bards. You want them to do magic damage, they have a subclass for that. You want them to be stealthy, they have a subclass for that, etc., etc. But I make a lot of kind of interesting new additions to the class, well, kind of to the worlds, which then kind of impact the class. Let's say some monk. I'll take Matt Colville's example here. He had a monk, and the monk ran into a higher level monk, and he had these tattoos and such, and he announced himself as the Master of Locusts. And to kind of compensate for the thing he didn't have, which was survivability. I know monks are kind of supposed to be glass cannons, but I wanted to kind of give him something because he was kind of a dumbass. I wanted to give him something that would survive and that would help him survive so he could kind of go hunt these masters and then take their titles and gain their abilities a little. That's kind of what I did because then I didn't have to like continuously give him items or have him take things that just made him tougher overall, like the tough feat, for example. I thought that was just kind of helpful.
Cool. I haven't done any homebrew content myself. I have been working on a set of stuff. It's mostly just new racial options for Pathfinder, because there's a lot of races that you can play now, and A lot of them just really didn't get much in terms of like alternate racial traits or feats. And some of them are actually really cool races, but they don't have a lot of support. Like gnolls. Gnolls in Pathfinder are really not that great. And I feel like there's a lot that they should have that makes sense. Like, you know, they're hyena people. I think they should have a fucking natural bite attack. Or having the scent ability, things like that, because they get little to nothing in terms of shit other than that. So I had this list of stuff that I was gonna. It was basically gonna be like a general, like set of things I would offer for these races for basically every game I would ever run going forward for the rest of time. Just I like having options, but that's really about it. I'm always stick pretty close to established setting and mechanics for games I'm in or that I run. But now I think we're getting to a good question. And you, as a self-professed terrible person, how does one make a memorable villain?
I think there are many, too many freaking ones to count to like ways to make a good villain. I can name like my personal favorites.
There you go. Top ones.
There is something I really like doing, which is putting the villain in front of the players while they're like low level, and just having them do something evil, not to the players, but in front of the players. And the players go, we should stop him, and then going, I don't think we can. And if they do, he's just going to, you know, wipe the floor with them, but not kill them. That's very specific, because they're just small fry. Why would you kill these weaklings? Just make sure they get the message and shove off. Kind of deal. Especially it works well if he has says something, and now you are gone. Do not cross me again. You are beneath my notice.
That is precisely the sort of attitude that I would say goes good for a villain. I love like really like casually super arrogant kind of villains that are just like they know they're amazing and they're not even worried about the party at all. They're like, it's not even worth my time. You guys are nothing. Like
And it's also a really great way to get the party to like go, we are going to get strong enough and kill that fucker.
exactly. Gotta make them hate him. That was one of the number one things I would say. You gotta make them hate the villain. You gotta give them a reason to just despise this guy so they'll go after him eventually, regardless of how the story goes.
So another thing to do that, I like scheming villains a lot, which is part of the reason why I'm kind of afraid to go on like online and get someone to DM for me, because I'm a very much a scheming player, and I think almost any DM would like fucking hate to have me in their game, because I'd like set up plots that would like I hope would like carry out the way I think it would. I'm the one person who can like walk into a movie and goes, okay, this is going to happen like this, and it annoys people then, and I'm pretty sure it annoys people when I'm DMing, when they are DMing. So having them, if they have any family, you can kind of mess with their family, not kill them, because again, that's kind of cheap. But let's say, referring to the earlier example, have them marry a vampire. That kind of thing. Or, alternatively, just they it is good to have like someone either stab them in the back, as long as they hate the villain and they want nothing more than to kill him and will find, just even if it seems impossible, they will find a way. That is the mark of a good villain. But how you do that can be scheming, it can be just being arrogant in their faces. That generally works very well.
Yep.
Just don't make them seem insurmountable.
Yeah.
If the first thing they do is just like waddle in while the players are level one and like power word def someone, they are not going to want to fight that guy ever. Are you kidding me? I'm not going to fight him. He has power word death. He literally says a word and I obliterate. No, thank you.
Or like disintegrate. I always had this this little scenario in my brain where like the villain for at a particular point, or at least one of the major antagonists, is like an extremely powerful wizard vampire, and he has this moment where the party gets to like his study, and he's kind of just congratulating them and then telling them like, okay, cool, you made it this far, that's fantastic. Now let's talk about how you're gonna pay for all the damages. And then they're all like, no, obviously, we're heroes and we're gonna stop you. And then he immediately disintegrates one of them. And then he's like, okay, let's renegotiate. You're gonna work for me, and then you're gonna work your debts off, and then maybe I won't turn you into undead minions or furniture for my house, you know?
That can work, but part of the deal should also be to immediately resurrect
Oh
the
yeah.
dead
Oh
player.
yeah, no. That is actually part of it. He promises that if they do it, I'll bring your friend back. That way that they, realize like, oh shit, we're down a guy, and if we don't acquiesce, then we're all dead, and he's also dead, and this sucks. But so now he's all posh. He's like super arrogant, and he invites them like, "Yeah, sit with me. Let's have some wine, Let's talk this over because we're gentlemen, And it's, I'm super strong, so I don't have, this is just a minor setback, but it kind of pisses me off, and now you guys have targets on your back. So congratulations on that, But yep, that would be my favorite villain to play. That kind of level of I'm much stronger than you, and you're gonna work your debts off.
The other thing that works well is the villain who has a point, just going about it the wrong way, but has a point. I
Misguided.
don't know if you've well, not really. Just kind of cruel in their methods. I don't know if you've ever read the Black Company books. There is a woman in there who is basically like a super, like a level 20 wizard. And she has under her command 10, 15th level wizards, basically.
Oh my God.
And she has this massive empire in a world which is basically devoid of other wizards. There is some like level 2 and level 3 with level wizards, but not really anything else. And she conquers like this huge gap of land, and she just kind of wants to bring it all together so that it can have like a better society. But she does it in a way that is like conquer and submit or die kind of idea.
It's it kind of sounds like, have you seen Jet Li's Hero? That kind of sounds like that, except not China.
There is she has a husband, by the way, the woman. I'm just going to call her the lady because everyone in the books does. And her husband is like cosmic level threat, right? He is if she is a level 20 wizard, that guy is like a level 31 wizard.
Oh my gosh.
And he like sets up these schemes to come back into the world where when she has banished him. And she is like trying to run the empire and unite the people, but also simultaneously trying to fight off her husband, for which she needs huge armies, and so she conscripts them. And she, you can see her point, because it would be so much worse if her husband somehow came back. But if the people did not know, the people generally don't know and don't care about the husband, so because he's been gone so long, so it's kind of a balancing act for her.
Nice. Yeah, it's crazy that she has so much power when everyone else doesn't. That's overwhelming odds right there. Oh man. It's yeah, we can gush on that for a while. So, diversifying a little bit and sort of branching out. So, you know, obviously we can narrow it down a bit. How do you tend to play the myriad of races available in D&D, like dwarves and elves and things like that? You know, there's obviously like a set thing that they have in the book about how races tend to act, but not everybody really like goes by that, because maybe some of it doesn't exactly make sense. Maybe some of it just doesn't feel aesthetically right. Like, the whole elves and dwarves are always, like, there's usually always animosity between them. Why? Because Tolkien said so, you know? And, or, you know, elves looking down on most other races or considering them to be, impatient or things like that. How do you tend to play those?
Which is weird, because if elves, like, generally hate people, why are there so many goddamn half-elves?
Right? Well, I mean, part of it explained in, like, Pathfinder is that, like, elves kind of look down on humans sometimes, but, like, there's also something exotic about humans that elves like, and that they find impressive, so, you know, sometimes they fuck each other.
Right. I do like the elves kind of looking down, but I generally reserve that for the Eladrin and high elves.
Mm-hmm.
Because, well, they're called high elves for a reason. And
because they smoke. Because they smoke lots.
That's because they look down on everyone. Dwarves, well, I do love Scottish accents and kind of the gung-ho, we like to drink and we like to smith idea.
Mm-hmm.
I like to think of them more as kind of a very peaceful society. They're not that war-bound. They generally say they are great sailors, together with Goliaths, who are generally more mountainous people. Goliaths and half-orcs and such make great sailors because, well, they're strong. And dwarves are especially good because they're small, so you can fit more of them in ships, and they are strong, so they can do all the hard work that a ship would require, and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, I generally kind of just go with whatever is normal for the region. So if dwarves were born just in a region, they generally do what the humans there do, or what the elves there do. Even if that's looking down on other people.
Hmm. How about the sort of monstrous races like orcs, goblins, troglodytes, and all the like?
I like goblins as the kind of tiny pyromaniacs, insane people. I like that archetype, so I usually keep it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't allow much play of them in games because they're kind of on a shoot on sight list, I call it. Similar to kobolds and actual orcs. But actual orcs, they are kind of gruff, but they have. I don't like. They are not just raping, murdering monsters. Not just that. They are a conquering kind of war nation, but they aren't like. They aren't complete morons. They are less smart, sure, but they know how to use a tool. They know how to build homes. They know how to have cattle. They know the basics of farming. The reason that people kind of hate them is because they are like the Vikings. Generally, they come over and then wreck your shit and then leave with your shit, which is annoying, of course.
Do you kind of go by that whole, 'cause like the way that a lot of, that it almost seems to paint is that like races, like monstrous races are just evil by default. And then like even in the Legend of Dritz series, like there's a point where a character who has actually more or less communicated with a deity, the deity Brady told them that like hey, this race is evil. Like you can wantonly kill this race because they're just evil by default. So there's nothing wrong with killing all of them. And you know, there's obviously some issues with that with Dritz, because Dritz is a drow who had a conscience, and he met a goblin who wasn't an asshole. And so do you find the evil stuff more nature or like a culture? So like, you know, do you like a
I
goblin
do
raised amongst
play
humans wouldn't
like
be the same
the
way, you know?
I don't play evil in the same way that I think other people do. Just because a race is evil, I just feel that makes them like tend more towards very selfish behaviors rather than social behaviors. So let's say the drow, they are actually, no, let's go with goblins. When goblins get into a pinch, they don't go out of the way to save their friends. They're going to cut and run, and they're going to do so quickly. Now, gnolls, those are actual fiends, so they are basically evil incarnated, made form. So they are generally. Those, I'd say, there is no good in them. They are barely sentient, and generally they're just here to eat, kill, and then progress. But trolls and other things that aren't like literally nightmare made material or just evil made material, like demons or devils. I'd say that's more like culture or them tending towards egotism than anything else.
Okay, yeah, that's kind of how I play it. Well, how I would play it, in a game that just started not too long ago. I'm actually playing a goblin, and like in Pathfinder, goblins have this whole thing where they believe that if you read, books will steal your soul. So goblins are forbidden from learning how to read and write, because they think it will steal your soul. So my character, you know, of course, in every culture there's taboos, and guess what? There's going to be people who are going to break those taboos. So my goblin found a book and read it, and in secret, and realized, like, wait a minute, my soul is still intact. Therefore, I have been lied to. I wonder what else I've been lied to about. And then comes to find out that horses are not inherently evil things, and neither are dogs. And has a crisis and runs away and almost starves in the woods, gets picked up by a random swamp witch, gets taught her ways, decides to dedicate his life to trying to dispel lies that he was told and learn about how the world actually works, and stuff like that. So he was found rather bright and was like, wait a minute, that's once he got away from that culture, he became less of a he wasn't really a psychopath anymore. As a matter of fact, he's gone in the reverse. He thinks that almost all goblins are savages, and yet he's still okay with cannibalism. And it's kind of a funny, it's a really funny back and forth, like, there, because he honestly believes that anything is potential food. Obviously don't kill it to eat it if you don't have to, but if I'd, there's no problems with eating people if you don't have any other pro if you don't have any other options, and you'll starve otherwise. Stuff like that. But yeah, culture. So now we're gonna narrow it down to characters rather than races. What is a sort of character, if you haven't had the opportunity to necessarily go through all these ideas, what kind of a character would you like to play as a GM or as a player? And if you can't come up with that, what sort of encounter you'd like to run? I definitely have some ones for these.
So a character I would like to play is one that doesn't die in the first or second session.
Damn.
That would be wonderful.
Damn it.
Other than that, I am really partial to this kind of very talkative kind of urchin tiefling who like tried to make a living off of marketing.
You say marketing?
Yeah. That's not really a thing in that time, but I like the idea of him like being the first person to invent like advertising, as he kind of people pay him for his services, and he like attempts to talk people into buying their goods. But as he continuously kind of starts up his business, he's constantly sued. Because that's not a legitimate business, you're not part of a guild, blah blah blah, you're not selling anything. So each time he just closes down his business and tries again somewhere else with the right papers, etc. And every time he's sued, and eventually in his rage, and now without money because he's like fought lawsuit after lawsuit, like an archfey finds him. And kind of makes him, and basically he becomes a warlock.
Nice.
He becomes better at persuasion and lying. That way.
I that's a very unique concept. Interesting.
In air quotes.
But yeah, that's pretty cool. I have a fuckload of fucking characters I'd like to play. I have the curse of tending to be someone who runs games, to some extent. But lately, the character I really want to run is, so in Pathfinder, changelings are hag spawn. Basically, I don't know if it's the only way that hags can reproduce, but hags have a tendency to find human men and rape the shit out of them, and then they changelings are born, and then they tend to replace human babies with them, and then probably sacrifice the babies to Gyrana or whatever the fuck other weird obscure god, or eat them or whatever. But changelings got a little bit more fleshing out in recent book splat books, and I really want to play a changeling paladin of Shaylin. That's the same love goddess that I had with my war priest, and have this issue where she constantly hears this call from her actual mother, and she's like an orphan child of the church kind of character, and goes through her whole life, ever since puberty anyway, hearing the voice and constantly trying to pray to make it go away, and then nothing works. Finds a way to kind of like tame it a little, and then comes into contact with this guy who that she loves, and but it is abused by him, and almost loses it and almost turns into a hag by giving in to her base instincts. And she actually physically changes at a point. So like most changelings have claws, but you can take a feat to where you become more hag-like. And the claws become extremely jagged and they cause bleed damage and you become like more monstrous. So like this is like basically like an extremely beautiful 7 foot tall woman with giant claws that is constantly haunted by this nonsense, but like is trying to aspire to not feel like hardcore resentment over that and other stuff. And then of course having a moment where she confronts her actual mother and kills her savagely. Because she believes like, hey, I deserve to hate at least this person because they've made my life terrible. Maybe loses her powers for it. Even elects to not use her sword, just use her claws. I've thought so much on this recently. I get so caught up in like fantasizing about playing characters sometimes. It's crazy. But yeah, 7 foot tall, monstrous kind of but beautiful looking paladin that is trying her best to preach love and kind of comes up short and maybe ends up screwing up later. Yeah, throwing that in there with that, throwing in a bonus. I've as in just a simple thing for an encounter. I've always wanted to run a burning building encounter. That's pretty simple, but it works very well when you include like all the smoke inhalation and trying to rescue somebody or something like that.
Yeah, and it can like really up the tension, you mean.
Exactly. There's a lot of environmental hazards that make the encounter extremely like difficult. I've always wanted to do a burning building encounter. At some point, someday,
I've
I'll be
always
dead.
wanted to run an opera house encounter.
Like during a
In
performance?
yeah, basically, and it being very important that that it's not like disturbed. So up in the rafters and across some of the empty balconies, maybe behind when the curtain goes down, maybe down there, or making sure you aren't shoved like through the curtains, that kind of thing.
So like
Actually, I just like opera houses in general, so maybe just a regular fight in there would be cool. But like, if there's people in there, that just adds like, don't if you miss with an arrow, it goes like directly into the crowd, that kind of thing.
Yeah, you gotta keep. You can't cause a riot, basically, or you'll lose who you're looking for, kind of deal. That's cool. I was also wanted to do a good chase scene, speaking of crowds.
I suggest not doing that like on a battle map though.
Oh no.
I
Like
think
it
skill challenges work better.
yeah, it's there's actually like standardized rules for chases that I've seen before. That you don't actually use miniatures, you just do standardized like, okay, he's this far ahead of you. And you make rolls, and it's like, all right, you're gaining on him. Oh no, now he's going into a crowd. Now it's going to be harder. And like, oh, now he's climbing. How good is your climb? Are you going to have to try to make, maybe try to take a detour? Good chase scene would be really fun. But yeah. So this is a fucking question that I could spend hours on because I have so many characters and encounters, but haven't had the opportunities to play them out. But so on the note of characters, is there certain tendencies that you have for characters that you've played, either in games or like running them? Like, do your characters tend to be like howdy, Do you guys tend to be like, I don't know. I know that a lot of characters I used to play, I often just instinctually did like a terrible British accent for some old characters I used to play. I don't know why, it just kind of happened.
I
have you ever
don't
had
know
those
what you're
kind of
talking
things?
about, dear. Some people find this weird, but I kind of try to have as many important female as male characters, like in games. And like I said, I do. I am probably at my worst when I'm playing someone with low intelligence, because I have trouble not scheming.
Just, I'm always a shitty person. I have to think about it. You know, it's hard to be someone
Yeah,
who's dumb, you
I have to plan.
know?
And I also like I like I generally go like people have like an intelligence of 10, generally like commoners, so they're not fucking like lame. Oh, the stupid the huge amount of stupid that people seem to think they are, which is kind of weird. Like, let's say you're trying to no, I'm not going to get into that. So I have problems with playing low int characters. So if they're like running into a I believe they're called gazers, which are people who like do this kind of weird drug that you drop into your eyes, and then you get like your happy memories from the past kind of bubble back up. You see that for a while, like those that has like an effect on your int in the long run, because it does like it pulls the memories from your brain and it just kind of clouds other memories, so it has like a negative effect on your int. I find those very hard to play, as well as what are they called? Ogres. That is also an issue for me. That is kind of it. Other than that, I like talkative characters generally. Because I'm the DM, so I'm kind of used to talking a bunch.
I would say, I, as a player, actually, I have a tendency to play male-female as, like, about a 50-50 spread. So, like, in Reign of Winter, like, I played a female character. My female characters often tend to be like not casters too. They're usually like really strong knight kind of characters. I guess that's that whole role reversal thing I like. Yeah, I tend to play 50-50 with male and female. I tend to like playing characters that like they have like some kind of inner conflict. To some extent, like the War Priest of Shaelin that is a usually extremely enthusiastic, but has a hang up about her family that's like close to ex like diff impossible to really fully get over because it was so personal. Or like the changeling thing I was talking about, where like similar situation, but like she's been mentally brought down so much because the voices don't stop, and it makes it really hard to not become the monster she doesn't want to be. Constant problems there. So characters that have some kind of conflict or maybe are like racked with guilt. I don't tend to play characters that are loners necessarily, like not like characters that don't talk at all, because I like character interaction. I don't like building up to it either. I want to just have it, you know. let's get
Give
some.
it to me.
Yeah, let's do these talks, you know. And I can get carried away a little bit sometimes because of how into it I get. But yeah, I tend to play those kind of characters. And I used to have a tendency to play intelligent characters, like wizards and mages, but nowadays I'm really big on playing some kind of divine character, or like something where deity is like big aspect. So clerics, war priests, paladins. I'm actually playing an alchemist who's like an archetype that changes based on your deity, and you get like domains and stuff like that. So even though it's not a divine class, I still made it about Aerystill, the god of community and stuff like that. And I've actually led like group prayers for our kingdom because I'm the court magister, and stuff like that. So it's pretty fun, cool. But we are actually just about there now. And so to end it off, this one should be fun. Is there any like kind of pet peeves you have on like character player behaviors? And it's like, it's not really something that is game stopping shit, but little things that like that particular thing, it's like, oh my god, this just, ugh. What things tend to get to you?
Now, I don't know if you'd consider this game stopping, but I have a lot of people who don't enjoy the adventure part of D&D, which is weird to me.
You mean the people who
It's
are like
like,
more combat focused?
no, they're like, we've been in this dungeon for like two sessions now. Why isn't it over? At which point I go, did you misread the title? You've met several dragons at this point. There is another part to this title. And it's called the dungeons part. And the only reason you are going so slow is because generally that person is complaining that they want to leave.
Yeah. Wow, that's dumb.
Again, the kind of flirting when it's unwanted, just don't.
Yeah.
And generally, I don't know if this is like a pet peeve on characters, but like people who expect like too much out of a dungeon master. And kind of compare you to other dungeon masters. Even if it's favorable, I think it's just in poor taste. They're like, oh yeah, you did this way better than my old dungeon master, or why won't you allow this? My other dungeon master did. Like, yes, well, I'm not the other dungeon master, I have my own rules.
Exactly.
Which again makes me look like a terrible person in general because everyone is always like, don't say no, say yes, and. And I'm like, no, fuck you. I'm going to say no when somebody asks me for something ridiculous.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for instance, like, and of course, what is allowed is kind of like game specific. So like when I started running Strange Aeons, I told the guys, I'm like, look, I want you guys to feel mundane compared to the things that you're going up against. So I don't want any like weird races. I don't want like any crazy weird concepts necessarily. I want this to feel like it's a bizarre alien world against you. So I was like, only core races allowed, and you're allowed to be an Asmar or Tiefling, but you have to take the trait that makes you not look like really outlandish. Like you have to basically look like a human for the most part, if you choose those. And then I okay concepts on a case by case basis for characters. Because there's a certain feel that I want to have, so there's certain things that I'm just not going to allow. Because if it breaks that immersion, and the game is going to fall apart, and it's supposed to be horrific, and ambience is everything. I took time to buy LED candles and burn incense, like we're doing things my way. And but yeah, it's game dependent. You know, sometimes I'm like, you know, whatever, you can do whatever you want as long as it's company, if it's like Paizo content and not third party, and I'll okay third party stuff. But you gotta run it by me and all that stuff. But stuff that fucks with me is I don't like loner characters much. Because it's
There's a
like
slight twitch, just
it's
as you
like
say it.
it's like having it's like you're sitting at a table with people and you just don't want to enter. It's like you don't want to interact with the other players except when you have to, and it's like. It's almost counterintuitive to me. I don't like edgy loner characters much. That kind of annoys me a little bit. I mean, you can have a character who's kind of gruff and doesn't say a lot, but he's not like actively finding a cliff that's not at the party camp so he can brood and look at the full moon instead of sitting with the party, kind of shit. That's annoying. Because character interaction is key for me. It's the number one thing I enjoy and love about any game that I play. I find inner party character interaction more important than interactions with NPCs. So that's probably number one thing. Oh, and people who are trying to do other things and don't like focus on the game. That's annoying. And not necessarily specifically like looking at your phone, but like, oh, I've got this thing I have to prep for my Pokemon League or whatever the fuck else you're doing. I just use that as an example because some of the guys in my group are a part of that. So, but yeah, distractions, that annoys me. Although I
Do you
admit I'm a
like
rules lawyer.
oh that well I don't mind that kind of depends what kind of rules lawyers you mean. They're like the people who are like, yeah, the rules are important. If you follow the rules, you will have fun. I don't mind those people. I mean, we disagree on a lot of things, but I don't mind them. The people I kind of dislike are the people who are like, they haggle for a benefit to themselves, and then when I go, okay, fine, but that means everyone else gets to do that thing to you too. And when it happens to them, suddenly they're all about the rules.
Oh, yeah. And I'm not about that. It's more like I notice something happening and I'm like, I don't think that's how that works. And then and I'm usually a guy that is the guy who brings up that kind of thing. Like fucking grappling. How does it work, you
Thankfully, that is very
know?
short, mercifully short in D&D 5e.
It's a fucking meme. It's like, do you have time to talk about the grappling rules? Oh shit. I'm a bit of a rules lawyer. I'm not like super duper bad, and I know that I have that as something I'm working on, but yeah, I can be a little annoying at times. Generally, I'm not, but sometimes.
I mean, like I said, I don't mind rules lawyering as long as they're like correcting me on the rules or but don't start looking up rules while I'm like running an encounter. We
Yeah.
can discuss the rules after the encounter or after like the session or during the break, then I'm happy to debate rules. But during the session or during combat, do not pull out the fucking player handbook to go, no, I think it's like, I will close that thing in your hands and then boop you on the head with it and go, no, I made a ruling. We can have this discussion afterwards. Like I said, I'm a bad person.
No, that's actually the kind of way to do it. Just you gotta save those discussions for later. Can't take away from game. But yeah, so that's pretty much it. God, this one went for a little while.
A little while, he says.
Oh yeah, a little while. But we'll find a way to shorten it a bit. Split it into parts. Anybody who was already willing to listen will find a way. But that said, thank you for taking the time for this actual cookie. I know it's like at this juncture, it's literally like midnight there now.
Oh yeah, it is. Yeah.
You know, that means a lot to take time for this when it's so late into the night. And I really appreciate it, and I love doing these kinds of audios with you. I think this is like the third D&D audio we've sort of done together.
It is. Though one was a couple's questionnaire, technically.
Oh, yeah, that counts. But these are always fun. It always feels like a new experience. I know there's just so much more we could do on this. Maybe I'll throw some stuff that we missed, and maybe we'll do something again. But until then, thank you again. Thanks everybody for listening. I hope you learned something new. We're gonna put some links in the post that we were kind of discussing, like probably some rule stuff and whatnot, just so you kind of know what we're talking about. And until next episode, take it easy, guys.